Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving with a smile on my face.
Why are you smiling, Ron?
I'm smiling because this is such a lovely time of year. Here we are in Washington, D.C., where the sun has not shone in at least a month, but we have just received the extraordinary news from a Fox News poll, and you know I pay attention to Fox News polls, that, well, the entire field of Republican candidates has been scrambled by events in the last couple of weeks.
So Thad McCotter, yes, no?
No.
No.
Not Thad McCotter.
No.
But we do have a new front runner. And Ken?
Is he the old front runner?
He's the old front runner. Mitt Romney.
And who was the front runner 4 years ago at this time? Rudy Giuliani.
Rudy Giuliani.
Who was second place 4 years ago at this time? Fred Thompson.
Okay. So, Rudy was your candidate. Fred was my candidate.
No,
we were
not.
Both wrong.
No,
we were both wrong.
No, no, the listener knows.
No, the listener knows the truth.
I never bought
yes,
into either
yes.
Candidate.
Oh, you were so Rudy. You were totally Rudy. Just like you're totally Christie now.
No, I'm
not. You're totally Christie. I know.
No,
you
no,
are.
I'm not. Because,
yes, you are because New Jersey is one of your home states.
No, I'm not Christie because of this is 5772. I can't believe how time flies.
All right, it's 5772
I'm Jewish,
for you.
Yeah.
But seriously, Ken, in this poll, this Fox News poll, Mitt Romney has not moved. He has not gained altitude.
That's the point.
He is not getting steam. He is right where he's been. What's changed?
Rick Perry has gone down 10 points, and others have benefited. Herman Cain
dropped from 30 to something like high teens.
But look at him. Well, Herman Cain won the straw poll, the unexpected victory, and you know how important straw polls are.
You don't take that straw poll in Florida seriously for 1 second.
I do, just as seriously as I took the Iowa straw poll that has boosted Michelle Bachmann to the front of the pack.
Okay, it did not, of course. And this Herman Cain thing in Florida, yes, for 5 minutes. But then people turned around, noticed that Ron Paul had gotten nearly as many votes as she did, noticed that, in fact, this was not having any kind of serious effect on anything other than the media reaction.
Who's the only person who bought the Iowa straw poll? Tim Pawlenty.
Yeah.
He's the only one who paid attention to it.
Right now, Tim Pawlenty's got to be asking himself, why did I pay attention to all those Iowans? No, he was out of money. That's what he was paying attention to. Anyway, the point is that now, back in Iowa, who is number one in the actual polls that are actually being done using science?
Mitt Romney. Uh-huh.
And down in Florida, where Herman Cain had that stunning performance, winning a third of the straw poll participants, who won the scientific poll that was being done at exactly the same time of the entire state?
Mitt Romney.
Again, not because people are in love with Mitt Romney, not because his numbers are moving up in the polls, but because all of his rivals seem to be systematically taking themselves out of the race.
It's difficult for me to say, yes, Mitt Romney is the front runner because, yes, he's getting 24% in the polls, which shows, as you say, that, no, his numbers have not turned around. So I don't think we ascribe that Mitt Romney has done great things. I think it's the collapse of Rick Perry. And as we've seen the last three debates, Rick Perry has just got progressively worse and worse and worse. And again, it reminds me of the old Fred Thompson phenomenon. If only he would run, he would shake up the whole field. He runs and he falls on his face.
Yes, and I was surprised by that, and I'm surprised that Perry has run so poorly as well. There was a tremendous amount of buildup for him. He had much more of a campaign apparatus than Fred Thompson had. He had much more preparation. He seemed to be in position much more than Fred Thompson.
Right. The conservatives who run the party, justifiably, and then the conservatives who run the party, say, look, Rick Perry is a true believer. They never felt that about Mitt Romney, and they still don't feel that about Mitt Romney.
But what is doing Rick Perry in is twofold, and I think we really need to unpack this a little bit. You called it a collapse, and I'm not sure that he won't make a comeback.
No, I agree.
But he has, for the moment, lost a third of his support. He's dropped back into the pack of candidates, and he has people making jokes about him, so that a lot of people are getting their first introduction to Rick Perry essentially as the butt of a joke on late-night television. So this is a really bad patch for him, and we have to just look at what's happened. And I would say, on one hand, it's a bad debate performance. He was not impressive.
Three bad debates. And the
first debate, he was fine for the first hour, weak in the second hour. The second debate, he was not good. In the third debate, he was terrible.
Right.
So much so that the headline in the Washington Examiner was all about how bad he was. This is a very Republican newspaper. He was clobbered by everybody on Fox. And all right, maybe Fox was never all that crazy about him in the first place, but they were unanimous in trashing him. And now we have to say, is that all about his bad performance, or was it a couple of issues that have been really doing him in with the actual Republican participant voters?
And the big base, the Republican conservative base, that they were not pleased at all with his statement saying that you don't have a heart if you don't support the policy of having
in-state tuition.
In-state tuition for children of illegal immigrants.
Which is a huge discount for them in going to state universities.
True. And of course, that's a very popular position in Hispanic-heavy Texas, and that makes complete sense.
The legislature passed it overwhelmingly.
Right. As governor of Texas, of course you do that, but when you're campaigning in Iowa and you're campaigning in South Carolina in a Republican Party that's not too soft on immigration, shall we say, certainly not soft on illegal immigration.
Should Rick Perry have done with this issue?
Well, look, had he backed down from it, he becomes Mitt Romney the flip-flopper.
So couldn't he have said this was the policy in Texas and it made sense in Texas, but I'd never try to impose it on New Mexico?
Well, which is basically what Mitt Romney says about Romney Care. The problem is that once upon a time, there was a Republican candidate running for president who talked about compassionate conservatism, and people bought into it. Maybe it's the Tea Party. Maybe it's just a new reality of the Republican Party, but people are not buying into a candidate that could even hint at compassionate conservatism. But Rick Perry has not been somebody who sells himself as a compassionate candidate anyway.
I presume the candidate you're talking about is George W. Bush.
That's right.
In the year 2000. In 2004, he ran as the avenging angel of 9/11. But in 2000, he was this compassionate conservative, borrowing the phrase from one of his advisors. And that seemed to work for him because it blunted the Democratic attacks that are typical against the Republican candidate in good times.
Remember when he ran for re-election as governor of Texas in 1998, he got 40-45% of the Hispanic vote, which is really huge for a Republican candidate.
And Perry has done almost as well in his last couple of go-rounds with the Hispanic vote. He's been up around 40%, and he's trying to reproduce that formula in terms of Texas, take it out of Texas the way W did. But the times have changed. As you suggest, it's just not possible to run that particular playbook in the Republican Party of 2011.
What seems to me is that the clamoring for Rick Perry and the disillusionment of Rick Perry, and now this new clamoring for Chris Christie from some of the same people who wanted Rick Perry and all these other guys to get in the race, is one dissatisfaction or unease with Mitt Romney. They still don't feel that Mitt Romney's a true believer. But if the conservatives think that Chris Christie is the answer, my goodness, I mean, this guy is hardly...
Why not? Why isn't Chris Christie the answer?
Well,
he looks like the answer. He gave that great speech out at the Reagan Library this week, and it really was a good speech, and he seemed to be making a case for himself in a very real way.
Well, he actually certainly made a very good case against President Obama's re-election, and everybody says, well, that must mean he's running. But first of all, 8,000 times when he's asked, he said, I am not running. It's not in my heart.
Now, it's fine on the 8,001st time. If you say, yes, I am running, then people go, oh, great, he's running.
Yeah, but in October 2011, with the filing deadline at the end of the month, and you have to raise $2 gazillion, and now that Florida is probably going to move up its primary to January 31st, which means Iowa and New Hampshire move up to the first week of January at the latest.
Yeah, they could even move into December, that looks less likely. But you're right. There's no time for Chris Christie to do that.
And first of all, yes, he did stand up to the unions. Yes, he did cut the budget. Yes, he did not raise taxes. But
doesn't that make him a Tea Party guy?
But on gun control, he's soft on gun control.
Uh-oh.
He basically said supportive things about the so-called Ground Zero Mosque.
Where is he on gay marriage?
He's against gay marriage, but he supports civil unions.
Okay.
And he also said that he also praised Arne Duncan, the Secretary of Education, for the stuff he's doing with the education policy. These are not the kind of things that Tea Party would welcome. But right now, they're just clamoring for something. I don't know if it's media-driven or what. I mean, yesterday, I was sitting in front of the three cable news shows. All had Chris Christie speculation at the same time. They were breathless about it.
That's right. Well, you have heard me say this before, but I would argue that the Chris Christie hysteria is short-lived and is recurrent in the same way exactly as the Rudy Giuliani stuff, which is recurrent. And he, of course, in the midst of this Chris Christie hysteria this week, has immediately gotten out there one more time and said he's sending a key aide to New Hampshire to get on the ground and assess the situation. This is largely a New York phenomenon. It has to do with the enormous amount of media that gets generated out of New York and the demand for a New York metropolitan area candidate to be in this race.
See, you've said that before, and I don't think I agree with you. I do think it's from people who are just dissatisfied and they have a short attention span and they think, well, maybe this is the next savior. But, we always wish that Mario Cuomo would get in the race. We always wish that Colin Powell would get in the race.
Both guys from New York.
Well, yeah. So I think this is the reason. For one, I don't think Christie's going to run. He did say that I am listening to everything you say, and then that suddenly the New York Post headline says he's reconsidering. I don't think he's reconsidering.
They desperately want a New York area candidate.
I
can prove this with two words: Donald Trump. The very fact that people talk about Donald Trump as though he actually were going to run for president or be a factor in the presidential race. That proves my point.
No, but I think it proves my point that they're clutching at straws at anybody. It's not just Donald Trump. They wanted Mitch Daniels. They wanted Haley Barbour, two other New Yorkers. Going back to straw polls, do we want to just give Herman Cain his due?
Let's give him his due.
Okay, that's it. No, but really, I mean, look, the thought, first of all, somebody on Fox TV said, I think it was Dennis Miller. Dennis Miller endorsed Herman Cain as the guy who's going to lead the Republican Party out of what? Out of 20-minute pizza delivery? What is he going to? What does he offer? He gives a great speech. You know, he gets people on their feet. But look, first of all, as a first-time candidate, actually a second-time candidate because he ran for the Senate in Georgia in 2004, but as a first-time presidential candidate, I don't think he has the depth nor the platform, certainly not the staff or the infrastructure, to make a difference in this race, and I don't think he's making much sense.
I don't see
sort of
him,
like what I just said.
I don't see him winning anywhere.
No.
I mean, he can win a straw poll in the same way Ron Paul can win a straw poll, because if a lot of people just happen to like the speech you gave that day, they may vote for you in a straw poll, but he's not going to win the Iowa caucuses, he's not going to win the New Hampshire primary, and he's not going to be gathering up delegates and be a serious force in terms of the nomination. But can he change in any way the dynamic of the race? Can he change the kinds of issues that seem to be salient? Can his ideas for 9% sales tax, 9% income tax, 9% corporate tax, can that take off and get a lot of support? Of course, the first thing they need to do is actually formulate such a plan. Right now, it just sounds like a bumper sticker.
999.
A couple of mechanical things coming up, and these are important. These are important. I know it sounds a little wonky. We're geeking out here a little bit, but campaign finance reports are due at the end of this month. Actually, they don't have to turn them in until mid-October, but they like to announce all their big fundraising and how well they've done as soon as the quarter ends, so we expect that over the weekend. And who do we expect to see leading the pack in terms of raising money in the Republican Party?
Barack Obama.
Yes, he is raising more money than all the Republicans
together. Mitt Romney had the most money from the beginning, and he's still raising a lot of money. But a little diversion to Barack Obama for a second. There are some indications that, yes, we're talking about a $1 billion reelection campaign, and that may still very well be the case. But there also seems to be some indication that there is a stepping back from some of his fervent supporters of 2008, that the inspiring rhetoric and the speeches and the hope, I love that word, the hope from 2008 may not be as prevalent in 2012.
In terms of fundraising? Because it's not that prevalent in any other respect, so why would it be prevalent in case of fundraising? I mean, it's just a reflection of the disappointment factor in his presidency. It's just a reflection of, I suppose, his polls, and particularly among those people who were either giving him the very large gifts or the people who were for the first time sending small gifts but sending consistently to his campaign, you know, the internet base of that pyramid. Those people are very unhappy. Many of them at both ends of the pyramid are unhappy with the results of the Obama presidency and with the lack of fire and the lack of inspiration in the Obama they've seen the last 2.5 years.
But we have seen a little different kind of a President Obama in the last month or so, rather than being the professorial laid-back, you guys fight it among yourselves.
Okay, Mom.
Basically, we've seen a more combative. Now it's sort of like he's replicating some of the combativeness we've seen on the Republican side. For example, the jobs bill, will it pass? Will the tax on millionaires sail through? Of course it won't, but he's showing these, look, I think this compromise crap is no longer working. I think it's just not helping my base. It's not helping my chances for reelection. And whether anything gets accomplished out of this, any legislation comes out of it, is one thing, but I think it boosts the party morale. The other day, Ralph Nader, this will come as a shock to you, but Ralph Nader said there should be a primary challenge to Barack Obama. I know. Well, yeah, exactly. But it's interesting. Given 9% unemployment, given the millions of people who are not only out of work but stop looking for work, there is nobody, you know, you were talking about the Republican field, if only somebody would run. Nobody seems to be saying on the Democratic side, oh, if only Hillary Clinton would run, only if Dennis Kucinich would run. There are some people who do that.
There are a few people saying it, but they tend to be at the fringe, like Ralph Nader and some of Hillary Clinton's, you know, most diehard supporters and a few other people. But I think what they realize is that either the candidate they would champion in this instance isn't interested in running, or they realize that the hurdles, the obstacles to mounting that kind of a campaign are much higher than they were a decade or two ago. The money hurdle alone. What are you doing it for? Are you doing it in order to make a point?
To
are
send
you doing
a message,
it
right?
To send a message?
Sure.
If so, does that ultimately send a message that Barack Obama is not going to be reelected?
Well,
and therefore you get a Rick Perry or a Mitt Romney or whomever the Republicans nominate, which is not a very practical outcome from the standpoint of most Democrats. So you're talking about a fringe figure.
But when you're talking about passion, practicality is not always the part. Look, a lot of people knew that Teddy Kennedy challenging Jimmy Carter in 1980 could very well hurt the Democratic cause and help elect somebody like, oh, let's say Ronald Reagan.
Well, but see, at that time, and I think in 1979 there was a very strong feeling that even if Teddy Kennedy did not ultimately win the nomination, there was no one on the Republican side who was a serious threat to be elected president. They misjudged Ronald Reagan, obviously.
Right.
They even misjudged George H.W. Bush. But there was this general feeling that the Democrats had enough domination at that period that they could have an internal fight between a Carter and a Kennedy and survive it. And it's possible that in 1980, Kennedy could have made that challenge, lost, and Carter still could have been reelected. It's not unimaginable that that could have been true. But given that historical example, I don't think the Democrats want to go down that road again.
Oh, no, they certainly don't. And I just think it's just interesting, though, that when you think of the presidents who have lost in the past, in the recent past, Gerald Ford in 76, Jimmy Carter in 1980, George H.W. Bush in 92, they all faced internal dissension within their own party, and you're not seeing that with Barack Obama. I don't know what that means and why that is the case, but for all the wishing, hoping, pining for somebody new, a new face on the Republican side, you're not seeing it on the Democratic
side. I think
in
all three of those cases you just cited, there was a real sense on the part of the challenger that the challenger might very well get elected president. And the Democrats would have to have a challenger.
Well,
Pat Buchanan maybe not. But still, there was a sense that it was a real challenge. It was a not just a quixotic kind of an attempt to make a point. It was really an attempt to knock off that person and make sure that person didn't continue as the standard bearer of the party. And I don't see anybody in the Democratic Party right now who is in a position to do that or would even want to do that.
You know, I think the 2012 campaign obviously is important. It could set the direction for the country for the next 4 years, if not the next generation.
But what about West Virginia?
Thank you for saying that, because on Tuesday, Earl Ray Tomlin, hello, Earl Ray Tomlin, the acting governor.
No, this is the Earl Ray Tomlin,
right.
The one who's been acting governor there now for how many months?
Since Joe Manchin left the governorship when he was elected to the Senate seat long held by Robert Byrd.
That's right. And, of course, all of these names are pretty much household names, especially Tomlin.
But even more so, Bill Maloney.
That must be the opponent.
The Republican candidate in Tuesday's election. So anyway, the reason it's a special election is because of to fill the Manchin seat. These guys are going to still do it again in 2012 when the regular gubernatorial election is up, and we'll see who's going to be elected governor next year. The only thing I think that Bill Maloney in West Virginia has going for him is that he's trying to tie somehow Earl Ray Tomlin with Barack Obama. If you remember in 2008, West Virginia is one of those states that really, at the height of its popularity, rejected Obama's candidacy, and I suspect they'll do it again in 2012, but I think it's a stretch. They haven't elected a Republican to the Senate since 1956. They like the Joe Manchin type conservative Democrats.
Very conservative, yeah. But also somebody who embraces the Democratic label. And most of the Republican alternatives that have been put up against those Democrats have been people who were in their own way too evocative of the old Republican image.
Right. Country club Republicans. But there are three other governor's races this year, and they all seem to be slam dunks. Steve Beshear, reelected in Kentucky.
Surprising?
No.
Why not?
Because
he is a Democrat. Kentucky has gone very red in recent years.
Yes, but not so much in gubernatorial races. And the Republican candidate, David Williams, is not doing a good job. He's just a lot of internal factions in the Republican Party, and he's kind of been a real big disappointment. And Beshear is raising a ton of money. Same thing in Louisiana. There are other people on the ballot, but there's no Democratic opponent to Bobby Jindal, which is amazing given the fact that it took longer to get a Republican elected to the Senate there than any other state in the nation. And yet Bobby Jindal, with tons of money, with pretty good ratings, slam dunk for re-election.
But I think we can say that in the last couple of decades, those people who were all Democrats forever in Louisiana have essentially become Republicans, and the Democratic voting base in Louisiana has largely disappeared.
Certainly since Katrina, yeah.
And it has been dispersed and become much less politically effective. So it's not a surprise that Bobby Jindal, who has been a strong governor, who has been even something of a national figure, setting aside the unfortunate response to President Obama's first address to Congress back in January, February of 2009, that one moment aside, he might very well be in the mix for this Republican presidential talk or vice presidential talk. But that's fine. There'll be another day for him. This year, it's clear he's getting reelected governor.
I agree. And I think it's astounding that there's no Democrat running against him. And the other governor's race is in Mississippi. Lieutenant Governor Phil Bryant, Republican, is likely to succeed the term-limited Haley Barbour.
That's right. Haley Barbour is very popular and would be reelected easily if he could run for reelection. And the Democrats have nominated for the first time in that state a
African-American candidate for governor, right? The mayor of Hattiesburg.
That's right. But not doing well in the polls, not looking like much of a threat to the succession of Republican governors.
Mississippi is still a Republican state.
This week's RIP, Claude Kirk.
Claude Kirk. You know, people don't remember him for the most, and it's kind of sad. He was elected governor of Florida in 1966, the first Republican governor elected in Florida since Reconstruction. He was elected. There was a big split in the Democratic Party that year, and that's what helped Kirk. And he was defeated 4 years later by Reuben Hurricane Askew. You know, he didn't last that long as governor. But he was a fascinating guy. He was colorful. He was cantankerous. He fought as much with Republicans as he did with Democrats. He was married 3 times, twice to the same woman. He just was, you know, the kind of guy that you don't see. They don't make him like that anymore. But Claude Kirk.
What is he best remembered for?
What I remember, when I was a little kid, I wrote to Claude Kirk. And I said, is it true that you're running for vice president? Because he was telling everybody that he was running for vice president in 1968. And he wrote me back this very obnoxious letter saying, excuse me, young man, but people don't run for vice president. They're picked by the presidential nominee. But he always had
kind of a lecturing tone.
Yeah, he always had visions of grandeur. He ran for president several times as a Democrat and as a Republican. But he was just a colorful figure. And as I say, they don't make him the way they used to.
And that's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR.
They don't make them like they used to, those guys. And I can't get used to the way that it is today. No one to look up to, hard times. And though I try, I just can't find a reason these days. It seems like the seasons are passing me.